Today is historic. Britain will be leaving the EU after 47 years of membership at 11 p.m. tonight. The last 5 years have been the most remarkable period in British politics to report on. I've watched all of it closely, so I'm going to take you back through it. And then, with Brexit here, is there a silver lining for Remainers?
Mr. Speaker, once again, he cannot ask questions about the economy.
I began writing about politics in a much calmer time than this. I became a member of what's known as the lobby, that's reporters based inside Parliament, in 2009. And there were big stories, you know, the financial crash, MPs' expenses, coalition talks. But in each case, we essentially had a majority government. And that meant there was always a level of stability. It's very clear now that the EU referendum changed everything. It shut the door to that conventional period of British politics, and it opened another one to a jaw-dropping time.
It will quite possibly be the most crushing and complete defeat any government has suffered.
It was the day we were supposed to leave, so all the more humiliating for the Prime Minister.
To be quite honest, looking at things right now, I haven't got the foggiest idea what is going to happen in the coming weeks.
It wasn't totally clear at first what had changed, but when I look back now, I realise that the Brexit years were defined by the biggest names in politics betting their entire careers, sometimes on a single throw of the dice. And most of them got it wrong.
I think the country requires fresh leadership.
So I am today announcing that I will resign as leader of the Conservative
and that I will not lead the party in any future general election campaign.
From The Guardian, I'm Anoushka Astana. Today in Focus, on the day we leave the European Union, looking back at 5 chaotic years of Brexit gambles.
I said when I launched my campaign that we needed to change in order to win.
Let's start with David Cameron.
Now that I've won, we will change.
To understand where things went wrong for him, you need to understand the Conservative Party that he became leader of.
No more grumbling about modern Britain.
At the time, polls suggested the country didn't really care about Europe. But Tory members really did, and they were very, very Eurosceptic. His first speech as leader to party conference in Bournemouth in 2006 is really interesting, because he confronted this head on. He made an argument that people in the country were worried about safety on the streets and schools and childcare, but that the Tory party wasn't speaking to those concerns. Instead, it was obsessed with its own concern.
We were sometimes banging on about Europe.
He wanted to silence that, but he was under massive pressure. As Prime Minister, he faced a series of rebellions by his own backbenchers over the question of EU membership.
I'm today leaving the Conservative Party and joining UKIP.
Two of his MPs defected to UKIP.
We have won a national election in this country.
Then Nigel Farage's party topped the polls in European elections in 2014.
So the next Conservative manifesto in 2015 will ask for a mandate from the British people.
All of which is why we arrived at a point in 2015 where David Cameron took the first big gamble of the Brexit years, putting an EU referendum on the table by including it in the Tory manifesto.
With a very simple in or out choice.
Why did he bet his career on this? I saw Cameron close up. He was always very slick, very confident. And he had 2 big referendum wins under his belt, AV on electoral reform in 2011.
The principle of one person, one vote is what makes our democracy fair.
And Scotland on independence in 2014.
I believe in the United Kingdom, head, heart and soul.
And at that time, I worked at Sky News and my job was to cover the Conservative campaign. In fact, during the 2015 election, I spent the entire time on his campaign bus.
Here is the Tory bus reversing.
And there was a touch of ruthlessness in the strategy. Cameron told me once he was convinced he could take out huge majorities held by his Lib Dem coalition partners. And he did.
I've just been to see Her Majesty the Queen, and I will now form a majority Conservative government.
And place themselves on a path where they had absolutely no choice but to go for an EU referendum.
You will decide, and whatever your decision, I will do my best to deliver it.
Obviously, we're talking about David Cameron, but he wasn't the only person taking a big risk. In the background at the time, Boris Johnson was trying to make a decision that would be critical for his career. We know he always wanted to be Prime Minister, and he was trying to decide what he needed to do for himself at this moment.
Hello. Good afternoon, everybody.
It's really interesting when you look back at the video.
I've decided after a huge amount of heartache because
when
I
when Boris Johnson made that announcement.
He said the last thing he wanted to do was go against
David Cameron, who was, after all, an old friend. They'd been at the same school, the same university. He said it had caused him heartache.
I will be advocating vote leave.
And to be honest, at the time, I think I just thought it was a kind of bumbling, uncertain decision. But isn't it interesting that at the end of it, he had ready that vote leave slogan.
And to take back control. That's really, I think...
I suspect that he had already been speaking to Dominic Cummings, who would lead that vote leave campaign, and he knew exactly where he was heading.
Now, this is a once-in-a-lifetime chance for us to take back control of this country. Can you hear me at the back?
Yeah! And so with that, we headed into a bitterly fought EU referendum.
If we left the EU, we'd have £10 billion more to spend every year on our priorities at the very least.
That would pit Johnson against Cameron.
We have a trade deficit when it comes to goods. We buy more of
with huge rows over claims.
What I'm saying is that the NHS could get £350 million.
That's not what the poster said.
Well...
And counterclaims.
Not the worst case, the mid-range is a £30 billion hole in the public finances.
And Bob Geldof on a boat.
You were on the European Parliament Fishing Committee and you attended one out of 43 meetings. You're a fraud, Nigel.
And in the days before the vote, a terrible tragedy.
Just before 1 o'clock today, Joe Cox, MP for Batley and Spenborough, was attacked in Market Street, Birstall. I am now very sad to have to report that she has died as a result of her injuries.
Cameron knew by the time polls closed at 10 p.m. on June the 23rd, 2016, that it was close, that Britain would wake up the next day as a divided nation. But I think he still believed it would be divided in his favour.
So here at ITV News at just gone 4:30 in the morning, we are calling it for Leave to win this referendum. An extraordinary moment in British history, a referendum that David Cameron didn't need to call.
The British people have voted to leave the European Union and their will must be respected.
I don't know if I expected David Cameron to resign the next morning, but it was pretty clear that his decision to go for a referendum meant his political career was done.
And as such, I think the country requires fresh leadership to take it in this direction.
And with it, a legacy that he had been hoping to build. I mean, as I understand it, he had ready to publish within weeks something known as the Life Chances Strategy. Nothing to do with Europe, but to do with how kids can get on in the world. And I know the author. I spoke to him in the weeks afterwards and he said the paper was gathering dust in his garage. David Cameron will, of course, be fine, but it was quite a fall from grace. I mean, his legacy will now only ever be about Europe, the thing he didn't want his party to bang on about. And he had to move out of Downing Street. to be pictured in a shepherd's hut in his back garden. Jeremy Corbyn, the Labour leader, seemed much more relaxed than David Cameron. In fact, the next morning, he kind of casually announced that we should trigger Article 50 now.
The British people have made the decision. We must respect that result, and Article 50 has to be invoked now.
So which left Labour advisers who I bumped into inside Parliament distraught. They looked like they were grieving. I can't tell you how overwhelming this period was as a journalist. Both of the biggest parties had been plunged into chaos. The shadow cabinet launched a coup against Corbyn. I remember being huddled with journalists outside a room, ears pressed to the door to try to hear Labour MPs plotting, and then running down committee corridor in the Houses of Parliament to another room where Tory MPs were grilling the leadership candidates. Their race became farcical when Michael Gove, Boris Johnson's closest ally who had been working for him in a leadership bid, suddenly, out of the blue, stabbed him in the back and said that...
But I've realised in the last few days that Boris isn't capable of building that team and providing that unity.
Andrea Leadsom, she was going to be the big Brexit choice, and then she did this bizarre interview in The Times where she suggested that her being a mother might give her the edge.
I am therefore withdrawing from the leadership election, and I wish Theresa May the very greatest success.
Theresa May at the time.
Brexit means Brexit.
She seemed like the obvious choice for the Conservative Party.
Turnout was high and the public gave their verdict.
And that is why the dominoes fell so fast, and before we knew it, we had a new Prime Minister. And yet for someone who appeared so sensible, so safe, so strong, so stable, as she would go on to say, Theresa May started gambling from the off, and big time. Look at the red lines that she laid down when it came to the EU negotiation. I mean, she gave speeches in which she said,
"What I am proposing cannot mean membership of the single market.
We'd be out of the single market, we'd be out of the customs union, that we were going to have full control of immigration laws," before she had even got into a room with anyone from the European Commission. The reason she was able to do that is because at the time the perception was of great strength. I mean, I remember a trip at the time where we flew to India with the Prime Minister, and there was this one really weird moment where we were in the lobby of an Indian hotel. Suddenly a bunch of us journalists bumped into cricket star Jeffrey Boycott, who is actually Theresa May's hero. She literally had a picture of him up on a wall when she was a kid. She loves him so much. And so we were like, "Oh, can we talk to you about Theresa May?"
Prime Minister.
She'll be brilliant, honestly. She'll be like Margaret Thatcher eventually.
She's like a new Maggie Thatcher. And he wanted Brexit done. And he, like loads of other people, thought that Theresa May was the person to do it. So in that mood, in that time, she took her next big gamble.
A few minutes ago in Brussels.
Which was to trigger Article 50 incredibly quickly, before her own government knew what type of Brexit they would even be going for.
Decision to invoke Article 50.
We had 2 years from that moment to get it all done. The rumours were swirling by then that Theresa May would call an election. And this was her dilemma. She had inherited a majority from David Cameron that was wafer thin, and she wanted to push through some controversial reforms like grammar schools.
So we need to go further, building on and extending our reforms so that we can truly say that there will be a good school place for every child.
And she wanted to push through her vision of Brexit. But the polls had her miles ahead of Corbyn. Her strategy chief at the time, Chris Wilkins, has described to us at Today in Focus a critical meeting in Downing Street.
And I think actually at that point the Prime Minister had been very much warmed up to the idea and was open to it, though obviously had considerable reservations.
But her husband, Philip May, clearly saw the risk.
And he said that we had to appreciate that it had taken them years to get to the position of being in Number 10.
We know now that she made the wrong choice, but you have to remember how it felt at the time. How could she not increase her majority? She was 24 points ahead in the polls.
so that we have the strong and stable leadership we need to see us through Brexit and beyond. The choice at the election is clear.
Oh, Jeremy Corbyn! Oh, Jeremy Corbyn!
And on the first question, you're on, nothing has changed. Nothing has changed.
And what we're saying is the Conservatives are the largest party. Note, they don't have an overall majority at this stage. 314 for the Conservatives. That's down 17.
I cannot tell you how critical that moment was. You've got to throw your mind back to how things felt before that moment. Until then, the best that any Remainer could hope for was membership of the single market. They were fighting for compromise. But at that moment, when the maths completely changed in Parliament, they just shoved that to one side and they thought, game on, now we can stop Brexit. They thought that the 2017 election had basically swept away the 2016 referendum result. And the immediate impact of that was a nightmare for Theresa May.
Theresa May is still facing a gaping 76 gap. And the question is, can she persuade enough people with what...
I present every Wednesday on ITV on a show called Peston. And I'm at a screen showing people data. Week in, week out, I was doing the parliamentary maths.
Now, the question is, could those 10 DUP come down here?
Because with every vote that Theresa May had, there was going to be a possibility that she'd lose it. I mean, we had never known a period of instability in Parliament like this one. And it wasn't just Remainers causing her problems. It was the Brexiteers on her backbenches too, because they had become so much more organised.
All the things Theresa May has said about the red lines, I totally support. But if everyone around her is delaying what she wants to do, then the answer is to get rid of those people.
And they didn't like the fact that she was compromising. And then came the Chequers Agreement, her first offer of what Britain wanted from Brexit. And it was way too soft for her Brexiteers. And I guess that's when Boris Johnson enters stage again with his next big gamble. When Theresa May put forward her Chequers Agreement, he could have backed it, he could have stayed in government, but he decided not to.
News breaking that Boris Johnson, the Foreign Secretary, has also resigned from Theresa May's cabinet. There were mutterings.
He said he could not, in all conscience, champion these proposals. Which is interesting to look back on, because his plan now isn't all that different. And look, the culmination of this really, really difficult period for Theresa May is that she cannot push ahead with Brexit until she has persuaded a majority of MPs in Parliament. That leads to a series of last-minute dashes to Brussels and Strasbourg.
The Prime Minister and I have agreed on a joint, legally binding instrument related...
Humiliating negotiations and repeated defeats.
The ayes to the right, 202. The noes to the left, 432.
The ayes to the right, 286. The noes to the left, 344.
If you were a Remainer in Parliament at the time, these were the good days. I mean, you thought you were inflicting defeat after defeat on the Prime Minister and that you were perhaps getting closer to your goal of stopping Brexit altogether. You'd given up on the soft Brexit compromise. It was quite something to watch. The mood in Parliament changed dramatically. I found it surreal speaking to MPs like the Tory Dominic Grieve or Labour's Chuka Munna, who were constantly in and out of cross-party meetings, plotting to win votes. They were optimistic, but it was really tense. I'll never forget sitting in Anna Soubry's office and finding out that she'd already had death threats that morning.
Oh, there's been a death threat in a letter, and then there's somebody who's rung the constituency office and said that I'm going to die soon.
And yeah, they did defeat Theresa May. But in doing so, they defeated themselves as well. Many of them aren't even MPs anymore. Yet arguably, Theresa May did move towards them. She was going to keep the whole of Britain pretty much in a customs union. She was going to offer MPs a say in a future trade deal. But in order to achieve the dream of stopping Brexit, they took a gamble and rejected all of that. And it's also important to mention the Democratic Unionist Party here, the Northern Irish party that had propped up Theresa May's government.
What is important for me is the policy, and the policy must be to get rid of the current backstop.
They were furious about the backstop. I'm not even going to go into the backstop here. It's a complicated thing. But essentially, they had an opportunity to vote for Theresa May's deal, a deal in which she had gone out of her way to prevent Northern Ireland from being given two different treatment from the rest of the UK, and a deal in which they were in a hugely influential position in government. But they voted against it too, in a move that would eventually lose them any influence in Westminster and result in a border down the Irish Sea. So, by this point, so many people had put their jobs on the line in a desperate bid to influence Brexit. And then we got the second biggest casualty whose gamble had not paid off.
So I am today announcing that I will resign as leader of the Conservative and Unionist Party on Friday.
That was it for Theresa May. She went and, in doing so, said she really regretted that she'd not managed to get Brexit done. It was immediately obvious, certainly to me, and I suspect to many of you, who was going to be the next leader.
And therefore I give notice that Boris Johnson is elected as the leader of the Conservative and Unionist Party.
We knew by then that Boris Johnson was prepared to make big gambles. I suspect some of them driven by Dominic Cummings, who had been director of Vote Leave. But we did not know. We couldn't possibly have known how he would behave over the next few months.
What we're going to do is come out on October the 31st, deal or no deal, and staying in beyond October the 31st is completely crackers.
I mean, even that pledge that we were going out on October the 31st, do or die.
Do or die, come on, mate.
Was huge. But what he did next was extraordinary. He slashed his own majority. Firstly, by coming up with a deal that he knew would be seen as a betrayal by the DUP, who were propping the Tories up. But secondly,
the Prime Minister left his country retreat checkers,
kicking 21 Conservative MPs out of his party.
Vote against the government and you will be kicked out of the party.
MPs who, by the way, had voted for Brexit, but who simply wanted to stop no deal. He kicked Winston Churchill's grandson, Nicholas Soames, out of the party. I remember we got a text from him saying we could speak to him, so we ran over to his office.
Thank you.
He was really upset by the way Johnson had treated him.
I can't, actually, you know, funny enough, I got all bloody weepy at lunchtime. I can't believe it, 37 years.
And then The Observer had a story about the government seeking legal advice to prorogue Parliament, that's basically suspend Parliament, which they straight out denied. They issued a statement to deny it, and then a few days later, they did it.
And to also declare the prorogation of Parliament, desire the presence of this Honourable House.
Realist?
No.
At the time, these things seemed so outrageous that no one could believe that they wouldn't backfire on Boris Johnson. Although we knew that it was part of building a picture that he felt would help him in an election, this idea of him being determined to get Brexit done while Parliament was determined to stop him. But look, to get an election, Boris Johnson needed MPs in Parliament to back him. Many who were on the Remain side of the divide didn't want Johnson's election. They wanted a second referendum. But repeated votes suggested there were not the numbers in Parliament to deliver it. And that was when Lib Dem leader Joe Swinson switched from supporting a referendum to an election. And that made her the next high-profile politician to put her career on the line. The result was devastating for the Lib Dems and for her.
Well, by a majority of 149, the party leader of the Lib Dems, Jo Swinson, has lost her seat in Dumbartonshire East to the...
So look, I've told you about all these people who made these high-stakes, high-risk bets. David Cameron, Theresa May, Remainer backbenchers, the DUP and the Lib Dems. But we haven't really spoken about Labour's frontbench. Because for much of this time, they did the opposite. They tried not to take a big risk. They tried to straddle the Brexit divide. But in the end, under pressure, they did take a risk. They placed a second referendum on the table.
And we believe the public should have a vote to decide whether it should be no deal or remain in the EU.
Was it a gamble? One of Corbyn's close aides argued to me that it was and said that Brexit is why the 2019 election went the way it did. But others say the problem was not Brexit, but Corbyn. And this is part of the story that is still being fiercely debated and is not yet resolved. And so, at the end of 5 years of gambling over Britain's place in Europe, there is one man standing, Boris Johnson. Along the way, he's made some really high-risk decisions that clearly did affect him. Think back to his stunned face on the morning of June the 24th, 2016.
And I want to begin this morning by paying tribute to David Cameron, who has spoken earlier from Downing Street.
Or his reaction when his decisions drove his brother out of the party.
Joe doesn't agree with me about the European Union because it's a...
At every fork along the way, his opponents could have behaved differently, changing the destination. But we have arrived exactly where Johnson wanted to be. Prime Minister of the UK, leading us out of the EU tonight. Some would say he's taken us out the other side of this period of gambling, that the casino is now closed. I mean, I'm not totally convinced. Sure, majority government is much more stable and certainly much more boring if you're a political journalist. But the stakes remain very high. Boris Johnson still has to achieve a trade deal, not only with the EU, but also with America. He also needs to try to keep hold of those Northern and Midland seats that he has won off Labour on the back of borrowed votes. And he has to deal with a union in which Scotland is now politically totally dominated by a party that has one key aim, to achieve independence. And you know what they're going to need to achieve that? Another referendum. You may be partying tonight, or perhaps commiserating. Either way, you can follow it through to 11 p.m. when we officially leave the EU on The Guardian's live blog. A big thank you to everyone who has got in touch on Twitter or left reviews. You know that every 5-star rating makes us incredibly happy. Coming up, why there is still time to think about the Brexit you want. Now, for many Remainers, Brexit Day is the end of the road. But for economist and activist Faiza Shaheen, who narrowly lost to Conservative MP Ian Duncan-Smith, there is still work to do. She believes that it's wrong to cling on to the status quo, but instead build a positive vision of what they want society to be.
It's Brexit Day, and I know that many of us didn't want to see this day happen. And personally, of course, I feel it. I fought Ian Duncan-Smith, a key ERG Brexiteer, Conservative MP, and I lost. And it was so painful to lose to that set of arguments and that kind of person. But the reality is we're here and it's happening, and we can't just forever be licking our wounds. One of the things that happened post the Brexit vote and in the Remain camp was that because people were so caught up in just making an argument of stopping Brexit, they were essentially making an argument to protect the status quo. Now, the status quo, of course, led us to the Brexit vote in the first place. And now we're here, we have to pick up an idea of what we want to change which isn't just about stopping Brexit, but is about a bigger vision for this country. And if we don't have a vision, if we don't have a plan, then it's very difficult for us to criticise and put pressure on government. Unless we know what we want to see, we can't be effective fighters against whatever the Tories have planned. For instance, taking something like tax, now there's a real danger that the way in which Britain manages to retain business is by becoming a tax haven and having like lower worker regulation, that we do a kind of race to the bottom. Or you say, no, we're not going to do that because that's bad for inequality and it's bad for workers. What we are going to do is make sure that we are a hub for cheap renewable energy, that we have an incredible national education service which allows people to retrain. And if you put your business in this country, you will have access to the most incredibly skilled workforce. Also, do we want to have an Empire 2.0 group of trade deals which keeps in place the dynamic and the power that we've had historically? Or do we want to treat these countries as equals and think about how we can exchange things like green technology in order to help these countries to develop? That's a very different type of trade deal. And then finally, I think, you know, the big one is immigration. And there is a real concern that as we end freedom of movement, we become a kind of closed door, inward looking, prejudiced country. Or we say, actually, the type of immigration policy we have is going to recognize that we need skills across the board, but also that it's not just about the economy, that we want to think about love and family as well. We want to make sure that people can fall in love and not be worried about not being able to get their partner here because they're not earning 30 grand or whatever the threshold is. I think it's hard for a lot of us to imagine what we do with a Tory majority and how we have any influence over the Brexit process and the trade deal process. But conversely, what a majority Conservative government does is that it puts the onus back on us to be more empowered and be stronger in our communities and stronger at protest, using all of the tools that we possibly can, which might look like legal routes, it might look like mass protests on the street. It may look like how you vote in a city election or in a local election to make sure that government knows that what they're doing isn't supported by the public. Yes, many of you want to close the curtains and pretend it's not happening, but it's absolutely time that we open those curtains, look out and think through what our vision for a better Britain is, because then and only then we will finally know what we are fighting for, not just fighting against.
That was Faiza Shaheen, Director of the Centre for Labour and Social Studies, or CLASS. My thanks to her. That's all for today. This episode was produced by Elizabeth Cassin, Gregory Robinson and Courtney Youssef. Sound design was by Axel Cacoutier. The executive producers are Phil Maynard and Nicole Jackson. I hope you have a great weekend. We'll be back on Monday.